Better strap yourself in. It's time for the Howie Carr Show.
Meantime in Texas, two people were killed. Another person was critically injured after a gunman walked into a Baptist church and opened fire on worshipers during Sunday morning services there. But you know, things could have been much worse had it not been for two armed members of the church, parishioners in their pews, who jumped into action and opened fire on that gunman.
Live from the Matthews Brothers Studios.
The citizens who were inside that church undoubtedly saved 242 other parishioners. The true heroes in this are the people who were sitting in those pews today.
And I'm thankful that our government has allowed us the opportunity to protect ourselves.
It is irrational, with all due respect to the governor of Texas, irrational what they're doing.
We're talking about loosening access to have guns, be able to take them into places of worship, store them in school. I mean, it's just absolutely irrational.
Who's your captain? Howie Carr.
On Saturday night, a Hanukkah celebration turned into an evening of horror as a suspect stormed a rabbi's home packed with adults and children. Witnesses say he began stabbing at random, injuring five, before running next door to the synagogue.
An atmosphere of hate has been developing in this country over the last few years. A lot of it is emanating from Washington.
It is an American cancer in the body politic.
Unchained and unstoppable.
All right, I agree with you, Matt.
Don't touch kids, you pervert. Look it up. Joe Biden. Keep me up from Biden. Look it up.
All right, well, you know, this is a democracy.
Truth is
going
to come up, buddy.
Well, I hope it does.
Rump swabs, hacks, and moon bats beware. It's Howie Carr.
It is not Howie Carr. It is Grayson Taylor, and we are filling in for Howie Carr. And it is time for Grace's News. Okay, so Taylor started off the show obviously talking about the terrible shooting in Texas. A good guy with a gun saved a lot of people, and but that wasn't the only really awful story. A lot of anti-Semitism happened this weekend, and of course, to no one's surprise, you know whose fault it is.
Obama's?
No, I'm going to give you a hint. His daughter is Jewish.
Okay.
He recently had some sort of ceremony for a lot of Jewish people and told one of the kids that he liked his yarmulke.
Still not ringing any bells.
He is the worst Nazi of all time.
Gosh, I'm really stumped now.
He's also the president of the United States. President Donald Trump is to be blamed for everything. Whether it's Bill de Blasio or Andrew Cuomo, you'll notice I'm talking about politicians that are failing New York. They are all saying that it's Trump's fault because, you know, why not? So let's play Cut 8. This is Bill de Blasio, who, by the way, this weekend, he was getting a lot of bad press for the homelessness issue in New York City. And this is what he had to say about the anti-Semitic attacks.
An atmosphere of hate has been developing in this country over the last few years. A lot of it is emanating from Washington, and it's having an effect on all of
us. Wait, so you're saying you're blaming the president by saying
not
it's coming
just
from
the president.
Washington?
I'm saying, but we have to be clear. We need a different tone starting in Washington,
okay,
which
so
we had, by the way, with Democrats and Republicans both in the White House, that encouraged this country to actually find some unity and some common ground.
Here's the issue with this whole theory. That, you know, D.C. is so toxic and Trump uses bad words that people don't like or Trump's mean on Twitter, is it does not in any way correlate to people doing heinous things without any rationale. Like, I don't like Bernie Sanders. I don't really like Elizabeth Warren. I don't agree with their politics. If anything ever happened where a Bernie Sanders supporter, we could go to the softball shooting, the Congress softball game. I didn't blame Bernie Sanders for that because in my mind, I'm like, yeah, Bernie Sanders says things I disagree with and Trump might say things that you disagree with. That doesn't mean a crazy man storming a field with a gun has anything to do with Bernie Sanders. And that's what we need to bring down the rhetoric about. It's not about, you know, how mean Trump is on Twitter or how mean so-and-so is. The rhetoric that needs to be tamed is the fact that when something happens, we want to blame specific people when truly, like Taylor was pointing out in the first hour, there's evil in the world. And it doesn't matter if Trump's president or if George Bush is president or if Barack Obama is president. There's always going to be evil in the world.
There's always going to be somebody getting into the deep, dark web and reading people's manifestos and writing their own and then just doing crazy things because they don't converse with anybody. They don't talk out their feelings. And that's what a lot of the left leads to, just people clamming up, not talking about anything. And then you're just in your own little closed bubble of your own facts and dreams and whatever. You're led to believe what you want to believe.
And I think even more than politics is, they love to cite politics as the issue. But I would argue that, like Taylor is saying, it's this loss of community and this new generation of people where everyone has their phones and everyone has their cyber friends. And no one is kind of saying, oh, Johnny next door, he seems like he's, you know, kind of in a dark place. Maybe we should, you know, get him some help. There's none of that community looking out for each other anymore. And I think it would be really helpful because sometimes that can prevent a massive tragedy if people are aware of what's going on. But I just think that all of this stuff that's happening in New York right now, which is terrible, it's speaking of, I want to read this story. Woman accused of assaulting three Jewish women arrested again day after release. A Brooklyn woman was accused of slapping three Orthodox Jewish women last week. She struck again on Sunday and was busted for assaulting another woman. A day after she was released without bail on charges stemming from the Friday attack, Tiffany Harris was charged with assault for slugging a 35-year-old in the face in New York. It's unclear if Sunday's victim is Jewish and police weren't treating the incident as a hate crime. The victim suffered swelling and bruising to her right eye from the pummeling.
I'd planned to talk about this a little bit later and we're still going to, but this is part of Bill de Blasio's new policy, actually, that the governor, Andrew Cuomo, put in place. It's bail reform. So for people who are arrested on nonviolent offenses, they are released without bail. Plus, they get a Metro card and I believe two debit cards, each loaded with $25, so that they can be assured that they'll return for their next court date.
Oh, right. Okay, now that makes sense.
Because we all know that the toughest part about getting to court is, you know, having the proper transportation.
But Taylor, my question, and I know Howie's pointed this out before, slapping three Orthodox Jewish women, so that's not classified as a violent, that's a nonviolent crime? It probably feels violent if you're one of the women being slapped, I would assume.
I would imagine it's classified as a violent crime, but the charges, I don't know what she was charged with, so that the charges may be upgraded later.
The two assaults occurred about a mile from each other. So that's what's going on in New York. But once again, you know, we can always look to the source, which is Orange Man Bad. I also wanted to talk. This is an amazing story that broke this morning. Joe Biden. Oh, Joe Biden. Taylor has said it before. On Monday, we get a bounty of riches of Joe Biden gaffes. There is no stopping him. They let him out on Friday, and he just does not disappoint.
We should rename Mondays, too. Malarkey Mondays.
Malarkey Mondays. I like that. So Biden had a couple things happen this weekend. Obviously, there was the protesters or hecklers, or is a better word, that were out at his event in Milford, New Hampshire. Taylor, I think we should play some of that just because it was kind of shocking how much they got in without really. The weird thing about Joe Biden is that, well, one of the weird things is that there's so many questions that haven't been asked or that he just refuses to answer. He gets very angry, whether it's from a voter, a concerned citizen, or a reporter, he won't answer them. So what you'll notice is in a lot of these situations when there's a heckler, people, for other candidates, people will boo them or shush them up or say, get out of here. But with Joe Biden, people want to know what he's going to say because they're thinking to themselves, he hasn't taken this. He won't take it from Steve Doocy's son. He won't take it from any reporters. So maybe this random heckler will get him to answer some of our questions. So I want to go to this cut of Joe Biden being called a pervert at the town hall in New Hampshire. This is cut 18.
That's okay. This is not a Trump rally.
It's on video and woman. We don't need another old white man running for president.
All right. I agree with you, Matt. I agree.
Don't touch kids ever again. Don't touch kids, you pervert. Look it up. Joe Biden. Keep me up for Biden. Look it up.
All right. Well, you know, this is a democracy. Well, I hope it does. I hope it does. Let her go. Let her go.
Now, I personally, I don't really like hearing that. I don't think Joe Biden is a pervert. I think he's an old guy who's very out of touch and doesn't really, shouldn't be running for president. And his family should have stopped him from running for president. But it is interesting that he says, I hope the truth comes out. Because as we also learned, Biden at one point said he would not comply with the subpoena. And now is saying he will comply with the subpoena, which I will ask Joe DiGenova about. But it's just interesting to me that if you thought about this from a Trump angle, which is if Trump had something like this, if Donald Trump Jr. was sitting on the board of Burisma and everything was reversed, the way Biden handles these questions is very concerning if he's going to be our next president. He will not answer things. He gets very angry and he just says, it's been debunked. It's been debunked, buddy. Move on. It's been debunked.
And that's the first thing he goes to with any of these protesters. That's his comeback line is, hey, this isn't a Trump rally. And if you listen very closely, the protester says, I hate Trump. And then he goes on to continue to berate Biden.
And also, like, you don't want to really make that many comparisons about why it isn't a Trump rally, because the biggest reason it isn't a Trump rally is sheer numbers. The numbers are lacking at Biden's events. And people don't seem as energetic as they do at Trump rallies. Anyway, guys, I got tons more news. We'll do the poll question on the other side. And I'm not done with Biden yet, because if you're thinking about a Joe Biden presidency, Obama's going to be involved. He's not endorsing Joe Biden, but Biden is still groveling to 44 in his own way. And also, it's a great day to get on the Trump line. 844-500-4242. Press 2 to get on the Trump line. Worst case scenario, you might end up on Chop Chumps, which is where we put our JV Trump line messages. So I'm Grace. I'm filling in for Howie. Taylor's on the board. This is the Howie Carr Show.
A nightmare to liberals everywhere. He's Howie Carr.
Hi, this is Val from Longmeadow, Mass.
Hi, this is Tony and Pietra from Haverhill, Massachusetts.
This is Murney in Fairfax County, Virginia, and this is the Howie Carr Show.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Howie Carr Show. My name is Grace Curley, and Taylor Cormier is on the board. We're filling in for Howie today. He's in sunny Florida. He's enjoying a couple last days of vacation, but he will be back with us later in the week. And before we move on to more Joe Biden news, I want to let you know that the poll question is brought to you by Orion Metal Exchange. It's the only precious metal exchange company that Howie trusts. Give them a call to get a free, no obligation investment guide about protecting your future with an enduring investment in gold and silver. You've got nothing to lose and everything to gain, including peace of mind, by calling now. Call them today at 800-912-2300. And with Orion, you'll get more metal for your money. Call 800-912-2300. 2300. Taylor, what is the poll question and what are the results thus far?
Do you still stay up until midnight on New Year's Eve?
It depends on the year, but yes.
What if it's a leap year? Is that like you have to?
It really depends on the crowd I'm with. If I'm with like a bunch of people and I think it's really fun, I'll stay up. But if I have nothing to do, I'm not going to stay up just to stay up. You might as well get the extra couple hours of sleep.
27% say they do stay up until midnight.
Wow. I wonder if people make resolutions. Do you make New Year's resolutions?
In a way, yes. I mean, it's just a good time of year to do it, I suppose.
But I
tell myself every week resolutions.
New Year's resolutions have basically become people going on a diet. Like, I very rarely hear people saying, oh, I'm going to start, you know, doing something that's not involving either working out or eating better. So, And that's kind of Lent now, too. A lot of people just give up sweets and stuff for Lent. Anyway, though, guys, this is the news that I've been dying to talk about all day. Joe Biden says he'd consider nominating Obama to the Supreme Court. He said if he'd take it, yes. I just have to say, this is truly so pathetic. Obama will not even endorse his former vice president of 8 years. And Joe Biden saying he would make him a Supreme Court justice. It's ridiculous.
It's just very childlike to, you know, will you nominate, you know, will you endorse me? I don't know, Joe, we'll talk about it. I'll give you a Supreme Court nomination.
Right. And it's also so childish where it's, oh, he's my friend, so I'm going to make him, I'm going to put him on the Supreme Court. When the people on the Supreme Court, I don't always agree with Ruth Bader Ginsburg and people like that, but who are a little more left-leaning, but they are extremely accomplished people. They are extremely accomplished people. They're all brilliant legal minds. Are we really going to tell ourselves that Obama deserves a spot?
He does have a Nobel Peace Prize, Grace.
I was just going to say he does not deserve the Nobel Peace Prize. Yeah, I think in the world of overrated people who have managed to get so much out of what they've done, Obama's number one. When you really think about it, a community organizer, he became president, which is amazing in itself. And then he got a Nobel Peace Prize for doing nothing. If he becomes a Supreme Court judge, it's going to be unbelievable. He's going to be the biggest empty suit. Or what do they wear when you're a judge?
Robes.
Empty robe that there's ever been. And can you imagine being like Brett Kavanaugh or any of the guys up there and looking over?
Kavanaugh and Obama would get along great. They both like beer.
They'd be looking at him like, how did this guy get on here? He was a law professor back in the day or something. He taught like constitutional law at Harvard or something like that. He should not be on there. And Joe Biden, it's so sad that he just wants Obama to throw him a bone and Obama won't. Because Obama knows what we all know.
It doesn't even seem like Obama would want to be on the Supreme Court. He just bought this multi-million-dollar home on Martha's Vineyard. And he's got a family that he wants to watch grow up and live accomplished lives.
See,
he's done.
Obama's smarter than all of those guys because Obama's enjoying the racket that he's made. Like he's made so much money. The money's just coming in because Michelle's got another book coming out. They're just making so much money and they are just loving it. That's the one reason I don't think Michelle Obama will run, because I think she's enjoying the life they have now. Whereas Biden could be enjoying his life, but he's running for president and getting heckled in New Hampshire.
What makes Joe even think that he's going to have the opportunity to nominate somebody to the Supreme Court?
His mind is, there's just, the sky's the limit when it comes to Joe Biden. Very, very weird, but we'll see how that works out for him. And also, did you hear about this, Taylor? The IRS goes after Hunter Biden for over $112,000 in unpaid taxes.
Wow.
Yeah. The IRS placed a tax lien on Hunter Biden and his ex-wife, Kathleen Biden, for a whopping $112,000 in unpaid taxes. D.C. also placed a tax lien against Hunter and his ex-wife for $48,000 in unpaid income taxes.
If anybody can find Hunter, it's the IRS.
It's so true. He really is a good Democrat, though, when you think about it. This is just another notch in his Democrat belt.
I guess he was seen walking around with his current wife shopping last week. He's put on a little weight.
Okay, Taylor, we don't like to fat shame on
here. I'm not fat shaming. He seems like he's enjoying life, that's all.
There was a little tone there. Guys, when we get back, we got Joe DiGenova. We're going to talk all about the deep state and the Durham report. This is the Howie Carr Show.
Live from the Matthews Brothers Studios.
The whole point of this is anyone subpoenaed relating to this investigation of the president has to be able to have some knowledge to shred on whether or not he committed the offenses he is accused of committing. I have no firsthand knowledge. There's no basis of that. So my point was, there would be no basis upon which to call me as a witness.
But would you comply with the subpoena?
No, I would honor whatever the Congress, in fact, legitimately asked me to do.
That is the sound of Joe Biden flip-flopping on what he had said previously, which is he would not comply to a subpoena. Now he is saying that he would. So there's someone who I have on the line who is perfect to talk about this. I am honored to have Joe DiGenova with me for a second interview in 2 weeks. I feel so blessed. Joe, what is your take on Joe Biden doing what he does best, changing his mind and saying, you know what, I would comply to whatever the courts want.
Well, he was compelled to say that by his advisors and by the Democrats who were saying the president has to comply with subpoenas. Now, the president has litigated his subpoenas. Joe Biden hasn't even received one, and he's saying he's not going to comply. That was completely incoherent with the Democratic position that Trump must comply with their subpoenas. So he just had to say this. He had to change his position. I actually don't expect Joe Biden ever to get a subpoena, because I think the trial in the Senate is going to be blessedly and mercifully very, very short, because I believe that the Republican senators have made up their mind that this is a constitutional, very bad joke.
I would totally agree with that. So, Joe, my next question, moving on to the deep state, Durham is getting closer to John Brennan, it seems. I'm reading off of a Town Hall article by Katie Pavlich, and it's basically saying that the closer he gets to John Brennan, and the more it seems he's uncovering, he's turning all of these stones and all the bugs are crawling to their little, you know, nooks and crannies. It seems like the Democrats are already starting to say, you know, Durham's not impartial. Like, we can't trust John Durham. And my question for you is, because I know you know him well, as far as his history and his career, is he ready for the storm that's about to come from the Democrats when they start, you know, slandering him, and he's going to be the most hated man, just like Bill Barr was?
Yeah, I think he's prepared, because he's a quietly brilliant prosecutor who's stayed below the radar. He's in Connecticut. He's not in a major media center. And more important than that, Bill Barr has his back. Bill Barr is going to be wearing the flak jacket on this and taking the incoming for him. And Durham will speak with indictments, not with public statements or responses to criticisms. I was interested when he issued his statement saying that he had disagreed with Horowitz privately, but then he made that disagreement public, and I think the reason he did that was to let people know that his investigation was extremely serious, and that he was going after people because they had violated the law and violated their oaths of office, especially Mr. Comey, Mr. Brennan, and Mr. Clapper. And I do think that Durham, I had suspected that Comey was basically free from any possible criminality. I don't believe that anymore. I believe that Comey and Brennan are at the center of a criminal conspiracy to abuse the law enforcement and intelligence processes of the United States government against multiple private citizens and deny them their civil rights. And so I expect Comey and Brennan both to face charges in a fairly substantial criminal conspiracy. And I don't think Durham cares one whit what anybody says about him. And the Democrats who abuse him and criticize him publicly are going to be very embarrassed at the end of this road.
Because he's looking now for, he's requested John Brennan's emails, call logs, and other documents from the CIA. Right. According to a person briefed on his inquiry, he wants to learn what Mr. Brennan, again, I'm reading from Town Hall here, Mr. Brennan told other officials, including the former FBI Director James Comey. So from what I'm reading, and I'm just a novice with all this, is that he's trying to track down where this all started and maybe be able to say, you know, Comey wanted this or Brennan wanted that. And like, who was the person pushing this the most?
Well, that actually, Grace, is a very good question. Because this just didn't begin with Donald Trump. One of the things that people forget is that Admiral Mike Rogers, who was the head of NSA, our electronic snooping agency, Admiral Mike Rogers discovered that for 4 years there was illegal spying on databases at NSA involving Americans who were not spies, who hadn't done anything wrong, who were not the agents of a foreign power, hadn't committed any crimes. They were being spied on by FBI contractors with the authority of the FBI and apparently with the authority of other people in the intelligence community. So what he's doing by getting Brennan's electronic communications from the CIA and his telephone records. By the way, he's also getting his personal cell phone and house records, his residential records, all that stuff's been subpoenaed, his bank records, everything, including Comey's and everybody else's. It's not just their official government phones and all that.
Right.
He's getting all their cell phones, everything. He's going after a conspiracy. Why did this happen? And the answer is it happened because Comey had been authorizing illegal electronic spying on Americans for years before. Brennan knew about that, was a party to it, because that information was being used to unmask Americans illegally and then leaking that to the press. So this is much bigger than just the origins of Russiagate. There's clearly he's into that, but he's into something much broader involving both Brennan and Comey.
And another person I wanted to ask you about, Joe, because I'm not as familiar with this, is Gina Haspel, because she's in charge of the CIA right now, and she's had a fairly good relationship with President Trump, where he's tweeted nice things about her. Her agency has somehow managed to stay out of this a little bit. They're not as attacked, you could say, as the FBI. But now they're saying that she's going to be in charge of giving a lot of this information or stonewalling Durham. Do you think that Gina Haspel is going to try to help the investigation, or do you think she's going to try to protect her own?
Ms. Haspel has no choice. She will cooperate because she's required to by law. Remember, she was the London chief of station when all of this, the use of confidential human sources, was going on overseas with Papadopoulos and others, Stefan Halper, Joseph Mifsud. She was aware of all of that. And if she wasn't aware of it, she will be telling Mr. Durham that she was not aware of it. Now, can you imagine the chief of station in London not being aware of something as major as spying on the campaign of the presidential candidate of the opposition party?
No.
And if she didn't know about that, that meant that the CIA and the FBI kept it from her. I can't believe that. I think she knew about it and she believed that it was authorized. However, if she found out later, which she now has, that it was not in fact properly authorized, she's not going to go down for John Brennan. I mean, she's going to cooperate fully. She will not be stonewalling John Durham, believe me. Mr. Durham is not going to have a problem with the CIA.
My next question for you, Joe, has to do with the pardons, because Trump was asked Tuesday at Mar-a-Lago if he would consider pardoning General Flynn or Roger Stone. He said he hadn't thought about it, which I think is probably him just steering clear of the question, because we both know he's thought about it multiple times. But something I was wondering is, because a lot of people predict that maybe he'll get reelected in 2020 and he'll do it right after. He'll pardon them both right after. But what do you think would be smarter, doing it then or doing it when this report drops, the Durham report? Because that's going to be, I at least hope it's going to be a big reckoning moment for the media and for the left. Could he do it then before the election?
Well, let's take this one step at a time. There is going to be no Durham report. The reason is he's way beyond that now. When he first started, he was only interviewing people. He wasn't using a grand jury. So that meant any information he gathered, he could make public. But he's now impaneled a grand jury. That means he's going to seek indictments. So everybody who's listening should forget about it. There is no such thing as a Durham report anymore. There are going to be indictments. The indictments are going to be his report. Now, with regard to the pardons, the president, obviously, you know, can pardon anybody at any time.
Mm-hmm.
My guess is that he will not allow Michael Flynn to spend one day in prison. And since the government is now seeking to refile its sentencing papers and apparently is going to ask for jail time, the president is never going to allow, in my opinion, I don't have any inside information, is never going to allow Michael Flynn to spend one day in prison, because the American people have already made up their mind that he was framed. If Judge Sullivan is, I think, stupid enough to sentence Michael Flynn to anything other than probation, the president will pardon him before he leaves the courthouse. And I would imagine that they will have a preemptive pardon ready to be signed by the president should Judge Sullivan sentence Michael Flynn to prison. As for Manafort, I think he may very well just commute his sentence in order to protect Paul Manafort, because if he pardons him, that may make Manafort liable for for criminal prosecution in New York. If he doesn't pardon him, then Manafort cannot be prosecuted in New York for his crimes up there. And I think some of those cases have already been decided. I think Manafort may have already won that ruling. So he can't be pardoned, but he can have his sentence commuted and he can be let out of prison. As far as everybody else, Papadopoulos, he should be pardoned, but that can wait until after the election.
Joe, how badly do you think this is, in the long run, going to hurt the FBI when all of this comes out?
Well, I think it already has hurt the FBI very, very badly. People tend to forget that this wasn't just some group of omissions and errors, as the Inspector General and the mainstream media have tried to characterize this. This was a full-blown violation of all federal investigative standards, both intelligence and criminal investigation, by the senior levels of the FBI and the Justice Department. When Comey mocks everybody in the FBI by saying that there were lower level people who were running this and he didn't have time to supervise it, that's BS. This was handled out of the director's office. People like McCabe and Strzok and James Baker, those people never touch actual cases. Strzok did because he was a senior counterintelligence official. McCabe supervised, but those are all people on the seventh floor of the FBI. So the FBI has suffered grievous damage to its reputation. All you have to do is talk to former FBI agents. They are furious. I'll give you an example. I have two former FBI agents working for me on a special project where I am a monitor of a labor union. And in order to monitor that union for a federal court, I have former FBI agents working for me. You should hear the conversations that they relate to me about their conversations with other FBI agents all over the country. This is a major embarrassment for them. They hate Comey. They are appalled by his publicly trying to make look like people are attacking the FBI when they criticize him. These agents know that people who criticize the Bureau are not attacking the line agents. They may very well be critical of the agents. Remember, there were no whistleblowers in any of this. One of the sad stories of the entire episode is that all the lawyers in this, except for maybe one guy over in Maine Justice, were corrupt. And the only person who's an honest broker in all of this and a hero turns out to be an admiral from the National Security Agency, Admiral Mike Rogers. How's that for you? How's that make you feel? But the Bureau is dead meat. And this guy, Chris Wray, who's running it now, is just awful. I mean, he is a pathetic figurehead doing nothing to restore the integrity of the agency.
Well, Joe, I can't help but think back to when Trump first said that he was being spied on and the ridicule that poured in from all these elitists on the left side saying, you know, how dumb he sounded. He's a conspiracy theorist. This is crazy. He's tarnishing the reputation for his own ego. And now you look back and you have to think to yourself, he was right. And no one believed him.
Well, of course he was right. And of course, the reason he was right was, and how did he know that he'd been spied on? He knew because Mike Rogers, the head of the National Security Agency, went to him after the election during the transition period and said to him, Mr. President, your campaign was the subject of illegal electronic spying. Rogers briefed him. So when the president said he'd been wiretapped, he used the word wiretap in the most generic sense of meaning illegal surveillance. It was electronic. They had human sources inside the campaign. You recall the stories recently of this fellow, this tech giant, Patrick Byrne, who was a confidential human source for the Bureau, who was inside the Trump campaign.
Mm-hmm.
We are told that by reliable reporting that former Congressman Mike Rogers, not the head of NSA, but former Congressman Mike Rogers, was also a confidential human source for the FBI, and he was working inside the Trump campaign. So Trump was absolutely correct. By the way, those of us who knew that from having read the opinions of the FISA court about the electronic spying knew that the president was correct. And we knew about the Mike Rogers briefing. We were called conspiracy theorists. My wife, Victoria Tunsing, and I were both have been written about in the Washington Post and the New York Times. as conspiracy theorists. Well, I'll say this for Mike Horowitz. He sure proved none of us were conspiracy theorists.
I know, he totally did, Joe. And I have to leave you there, but thank you so much. And we really appreciate you calling in. We look forward to hearing from you again next week. I know a lot of us cannot wait for these indictments. It's going to be like Christmas all over again. But thank you, Joe, for calling in. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll be back on the other side. I'm Grace, filling in for Howie. And this is the Howie Carr Show.
He's suave. He's debonair. He's Howie Carr.
This is Mark in Williston, Vermont.
This is Marie in Somerville, Massachusetts.
This is Mike from South Attleboro, Mass. And this is the Howie Carr Show.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back. I'm Grace, filling in for Howie. Taylor's on the board. We get a short little segment here. We just had a nice little interview with Joe DiGenova. And I have to say, Taylor, I was practicing all day for that interview. And it's really confusing when you start reading into, you know, deeper than the initial level of this stuff with all the names and all the spies and Carter Page. It's confusing for me, and I'm around it every single day. I can't imagine other young people our age following this as closely.
I was thinking earlier today, what must Joe DiGenova's desk look like?
Well, look at mine just from interviewing him for 10 minutes.
It's nothing.
I don't know how people follow it. And I admire people who can because it's confusing. I know that things were wrong and I know some of the basic facts, but there's a lot of players in this. And that's why we need to have people like Joe on to explain all the different corrupt layers of the deep, deep state. It is deep indeed. Guys, on the other side, Taylor will be back in the hot seat. I'm Grace, filling in for Howie. This is the Howie Carr Show.